one of my biggest first as an independent consultant, my biggest first client was Southern California Edison. And I worked with them after I became the risk guy. So I did a lot of time in the utility industries. And it's kind of interesting because this is what happens in project management. Somebody finds it and goes, "Ah, we need that." And it's kind of like, "And this is a surprise to you? How?" But they do. Invariably, it was like first big clients were utilities, and everything was utilities. Oh my gosh, I couldn't get, Florida Power and Light, Austin Power and Light, everybody Power and Light. And I had a lot of utility customers. And then I went to one particular industry and they said, "Oh, we're looking at your background. You're all utilities." And I said, "No, I'm all project management." And they said, "Yeah, but we don't know that you can help us."
Hi, and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager podcast for Sunday, the 27th of August, 2023. This is your host, Nigel Creaser, and I'm still on my summer break from the podcast, and I have a rerun, the wonderful Carl Pritchard, The Risk Guy. So enjoy. Just a quick shout out, another way that I found that you could support the show, and there's some info in the show notes, is that it's the British Podcast Awards this year for their voting cuts off on the 5th of September for what they call the People's Choice. I have no delusions that I will not win it, but being voted for and maybe getting one on lists, I don't know whether they have specialised lists or anything like that, means that discoverability for the podcast would be improved, which is always the battle with getting the show out to people. So if you're inclined to vote for me, and actually you probably vote for others as well, I personally voted for the Social Distance Sports Bar podcast that I really enjoy. If you go along to British Pods 2023, for on my website, so nigelcreaser.com/britishpods2023, and then that will redirect you to the right page, and you search for me, the Sunday Lunch Project Manager. It should pop up, click on that, and then cast your vote and you verify it, things like that, and then you can vote for other ones as well if you want. So if you do that, I'd be very grateful, and tell your friends. Cheers now. So I have a number of sponsors, affiliate links, in the way that it's set up, that have kindly allowed me to share their services, really. The first one is Mike Lane, and Mike runs PM online PM courses, and it is a great resource for getting those fundamentals of project management trained, reasonably priced, and Mike presents it in an accessible and clear manner. You can check out some of his videos on his YouTube channel and kind of give you a view of where they are. But the code for that, if you go to nigelcreaser.com/online PM courses, all one word, lowercase, that'll redirect you to it. There's varying different levels that you can buy. You can buy individual courses, you can buy pathways as well, if you like. And I get a kickback off those. Mike kindly shares me that. So if you do jump on and use it, I hope you find it really useful. I think he has money back guarantees and things like that as well. So there's a very limited risk on that. So jump on that, and that again is nigelcreaser.com/online PM courses, and enjoy.
I'd like to welcome Carl Pritchard onto the Sunday Lunch Project podcast today. Carl is the principal and founder of Pritchard Management Associates. As a lecturer, he's considered a leading authority on risk and communication management and presents on a variety of management topics, from project essentials to the complexities of network diagramming and team motivation. He's worked as an instructor around the world, training some leading international organizations, as well as private clients and the PMI. He's the US correspondent for the UK Project Management Journal, Project Manager Today. And Carl's recorded numerous presentations for international conferences on DVD and developed online training for PMI as well. He serves as a board of directors for projectconnections.com and presents podcasts for them, and recently recorded an extensive audio training program, the Portable PMP Prep, with Bruce Falk. And he served as a semi-final judge on the PMI's annual Project of the Year competition and the Federal Highways Administration as a judge for their biannual project competition. He regularly consults and coaches on project management, presentation skills, e-learning, course development, and with a variety of organizations. And he holds BA from the Ohio State University and is a project management professional as certified by the PMI. He's authored several texts, including Risk Management, Concepts and Guidance, the Project Management Communications Toolkit, the Risk Management Memory Jogger, Project Management Lessons from the Field. He is a dynamic and entertaining and fun keynote presenter, speaker, and trainer. And some quotes from people who have met Carl or worked with Carl. Carl is by far one of the best corporate educators I've experienced as a project manager from Grupisch Schneider. A true project management hero and with a degree in comedy psychology. A project manager from TSYS. And with over
that's my favorite, by the way.
That's excellent. With over 2,900 of his students passing the PMP certification. If you're interested, you could be next. And I, having stalked Carl's LinkedIn profile, I also found that in a previous life, he was a news director, which is fascinating me. So I think we'll probably get onto that at some point, no doubt. So, Carl, it's a pleasure to have you on. Welcome to the show.
Wow, thanks. And yeah, I feel like I'm going to bury myself under the weight of my own introduction.
Yeah, it's a great introduction when and looking back over your and to be honest, there was more I could have put in, but I thought I'll be spending more time talking about your introduction if I'm not careful than talking to you. So, as you know, I've sent you a bunch of questions. I'm going to rattle through them and we can have a chat about you, your life in project management, and what makes you tick. So, kicking off at the beginning, the birth of Carl Pritchard. Where was that?
That was Columbia. Actually, I'm born in Salem, Ohio, but I'm from Columbiana, Ohio. And the reason you've never heard of Columbiana, Ohio, is it is a little map dot. It is a little place nobody's ever heard of. And I it was funny because I always tell people, they go, where are you from? Columbiana, Ohio. Oh, Columbus. And it's like, no, Columbiana. It's a little map dot where my father's biggest just disaster in his life was when he called me up, and I was living in Maine at the time. But Dad called up and he said, it's over. Town's gone to hell. And I said, Dad, what's wrong? And he goes, no, it's over now. And I said, what happened? Two things happened in the same month. I said, what? He said, one, they put in another traffic signal. Two, they opened a McDonald's. And to him, that was the end of life as we knew it in Columbia.
Yeah, I can get the town I'm from. Not sure sizes and difference, but I've got some friends who've come from Manchester, the city of Manchester in the UK, live around the area. And we talk about the fact of where you're meeting and say, by the traffic lights. Because when I grew up, there was only one set of traffic lights in the whole town, and
by
the roundabout. And there was only ever one roundabout when I was growing up. And if I say to someone who grew up in the area, I'll meet you by the roundabout, they'd know exactly where I meant. Anyone who's new to the area in the last 20 years, absolutely going, they'd just be looking at me dumbstruck.
Like, of course, there are like 20 roundabouts. Which one do you mean?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I mean, the one.
It was we had a Pelican crossing, a button crosswalk, and it was kind of like same sort of thing. When that arrived, it was fascinating. So
it's over.
Yeah. So You were born in Salem, Ohio. Is that the famous Salem from Stephen King, or is that the different Salem?
No. Salem, as a matter of fact, interesting factoid about Salem. They're the most popular city name in the United States is Springfield.
Yeah.
The second most popular city name in the United States is Salem.
Oh, wow.
Almost every state has a Salem.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
See, I've learned something this evening already.
Valuable data.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll get it on a Who Wants to Be a Millionaire quiz or something like that.
Okay.
So where are you living now? Are you still in the same area or have you moved around?
No, we moved big time. As you mentioned earlier, I was in radio. So in radio, you just jump from town to town. Mm-hmm. And I lived in Maine for a while. And now I have permanently settled outside Washington, D.C. in Frederick, Maryland.
Oh, really?
So it's kind of a nice place. It's grown a lot. We moved here temporarily 35 years ago, and now it's just me and my wife, and we are basically denizens of this place, and you know, we're the locals, whereas the newcomers are all new.
Yeah,
so we've actually qualified now as locals after 35 years.
In some places that can take a little while, can't it?
Yeah, it can take a generation.
Yeah, or two. So you mentioned your wife there. What any family?
Yeah, I have my lovely wife, Nancy, a goddess to be worshipped. I have two sons, Adam and James, and you couldn't pick two boys who are more opposite. My eldest son is he's the curator at the Virginia Museum of Natural History. He's a paleontologist, and he runs a dig once a year out in Ghost Ranch, New Mexico. But that's his gig. And my youngest son is an 18-wheeler truck driver.
Wow.
So, yeah, kind of one end of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah. Both fascinating jobs.
Yeah.
Especially when you imagine.
That I say is both paying jobs. Yay. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. And yeah, it's funny when, like, when you just said about Frederick, Maryland and all from my point of view over here across the pond, it's all very romantic sounding places, and driving an 18-wheeler truck across America is kind of one of those big iconic kind of things that you see on the TV.
You know, the thing is, it's funny because when he started driving truck, one of the first things, his mom and I were both like, can we come see?
Yeah, and it reminds me of Smokey and the Bandit straight away with something like that.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Except he's the kid who's never had an accident, never gotten a ticket. Yeah, so
that's good. So as you say, you were in Salem. You kind of did you grow up in Columbiana?
Yeah. Grew up in the same as you know. Grew up. I was actually I didn't even have a name until I went off to college. And the reason I say that is because I grew up, my father was the only doctor in this one horse town.
Yeah.
And so I grew up, you're Doc's boy. And so I spent my entire youth as Doc's boy. I had no name and didn't get a name till I went to Ohio State.
So when was that you were around? If it's not too indelicate question to say.
No, I was born and raised. I got out of Columbiana in 1975. Moved off to Columbus and went to OSU until 1979 and never looked back. Yeah.
Wow. So what did you study at university now, or college as you guys?
I was a journalism major. My whole vision was what I wanted to do before I died. I wanted to someday be a news director at a top 10 station in a top 10 market. And the weird thing for me was in hopping around job to job and everything else, I actually accomplished that goal by the time I was 26 years old.
Wow.
It's kind of like, well, crap.
What am I going to do now?
I peaked too early and we're done here. So.
Were you just setting your goals too low then? Were you?
I guess I was.
Yeah, you should have been looking at the top news director in the country.
Well, and I found out, too, the interesting thing that I discovered about radio was that it doesn't pay anything. That was the other side of the dark side of radio, was that you make no money at it. So I was forever moonlighting and trying to pick up extra cash. And that's how I landed in project management.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
so,
I was.
So, yeah, tell me about that. How did you, it's that endearing question for people of a certain age in project management, and I'm one of those, is that you get people now, and I've had the conversation with a couple of other guys, is that you get people arriving out of university with a project management degree.
I know.
Planning to be a project manager.
Whereas, how crazy is that?
Yeah, whereas when I was coming out of college and school, I'd never heard of a project manager. I didn't know what they did. I may have had a vague recollection that maybe they built bridges or houses or something like that, but very rare. But and so tumbled into project management, as I think a lot of people do. So So how did you end up PMing then?
I am proof that it is the accidental profession, and because I had no designs on it, I got hired by one of the big telecoms. And what I was doing to moonlight while I was still running the news department in D.C. was I was writing anything anybody would hire me to write. And I got hired by one big utility company to write a bunch of video scripts on contract management. Right. And I did it through a consulting firm. And they came back and they really liked them because, well, golly, they gave me all this data and I'm a decent writer. Thank you. Done. Well, then this one big telecom firm read about that work through the consulting firm I was working with part-time. And they said, oh, you know what we need? We need somebody to write a white paper for one of our executives. And I said, yeah, I can write a white paper. Then I hung up the phone and said, what's a white paper? So I went ahead and met with this executive. And I sat down with him and I said, what do you want the paper to be about? And he said, I'd like it to be about 40 pages. And I said, no, I'm sorry. I misphrased the question. What do you want it to be about? And he said, oh, I want it to be about issues and concerns in project management in our organization. And I said, great. Do you have data? He said, no, I have no data. And I said, well, how am I supposed to get data to write this? And he said, here's a list of 35 of our project managers. Interview as many of them as you can. Put together the data. Compile it. Make me look really, really smart. And that's what I want my white paper to be about. So I was his ghost. I was a ghostwriter. And I wrote this beautiful 40-page white paper. Just left him misty-eyed and weepy. And I picked up a rather substantial paycheck for it, and that was that. And I was sure I was just done. It was one more gig under my belt. Well, it was about 6 months later, or 6 weeks later, rather, that they called back, and they said, hey, we need you to do another gig for that company. And I said, they need another white paper? No, they want you to come in and do some consulting work. And I said, I'm sorry, consulting work on what? And they said, project management. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm a writer. I'm a really good writer. I'm good at gathering data and spilling it back out, but I have no idea about anything on project management. And then he said, well, you know, talk to the guy. And so I'm talking to the guy and he's, you know, you're perfect for this. And I'm like, I don't know squat. And he said, doesn't matter. We'll put you through our training program. And I said, still, I'm the wrong guy to be giving you advice on how to run your project management. And he goes, no, you're the perfect guy. And I said, no, I'm the wrong guy. And he said, and then I caught myself and went, wait, what does this pay? and you know, I'm a 20 something, just basically barely making ends meet. And he said, here's what we'll do. And so I was working at WASH-FM in DC from 4 a.m. to noon. So I was on morning drive, and then I would get off the air, and I would go down to this utilities, telecoms federal center in D.C. and work there from 1 till 7. And they put me through all the training. They did everything else. So I was burning the candle at both ends for almost 2 years. But over that time, I was actually learning to be a project manager. And ultimately, it came down to I had to make a choice because I was just – fried.
Yeah.
And here I am.
Oh, wow. So that's how you got into PMing.
Yeah, that's kind of the not so short version.
And in some ways, I know there's a few people that have gone, the why being how much?
Oh, it's exactly.
It's always a pertinent question, isn't it? So you mentioned there that you're the telecoms and obviously the news industry that you worked in. What other industries have you worked in across that time?
Yeah, and one of my biggest first as an independent consultant, my biggest first client was Southern California Edison. And I worked with them after I became the risk guy. So I did a lot of time in the utility industries. And it's kind of interesting because this is what happens in project management. Somebody finds it and goes, oh, we need that. And it's kind of like, and this is a surprise to you, how? But they do. Invariably, it was like first big clients were utilities, and everything was utilities. Oh, my gosh. I couldn't get, you know, Florida Power and Light, Austin Power and Light, everybody Power and Light. And I had a lot of utility customers. And then I went to one particular industry, and they said, oh, we're looking at your background. You're all utilities. And I said, no, I'm all project management. And they said, yeah, but we don't know that you can help us. And that was a financial services firm, a bank. And then they decided to take a flyer on the utility guy. And I became the financial guy. And I worked with this bank and that bank and this, you know, this insurance company, which also, well, I know you're a bank person, but we'll try out in the insurance industry. And that's the way it's all gone. And this is the thing that's kind of intriguing is in project management, a company, somebody in a company, and it won't be the whole company, it'll be some one poor soul, will figure out that project management has merit and value. And they'll go back and say, we should be doing project management. And everybody go, oh, that's new. It's like, it's not new. It's a zillion years old, please.
Yeah. But I've heard it described, and that's a podcast I listen to, a guy's managertools.com, fantastic podcast, and they have a general management tool techniques, and they have one on project management, and they're kind of boiling it down to the point of when you've got projects being run as a normal manager, and he said, who does what by when is fundamentally that's what it is, and then what's going to stop who's doing what by when, and try and stop them things happening. It's, you can get some more devil in the detail, but it's as you say, so someone's going to build a bridge in the Roman times. Well, who's going to do what by when? That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, and that we didn't always have the right title, you know. You know, some of them it was just Your Majesty, you know. But there's always been somebody in charge, and somebody trying to make sure things don't go off the rails.
Yeah. Wow. So you say you're working in those industries. So what was that? Was that sort of hardware type thing, software, or was it what kind of sort of product specialist, or was it varied with you in those industries?
Almost everybody who has hired me to do some kind of analysis initially, and then that lasts for about a month, and then they go, oh, you know what, you're kind of a funny guy, do you ever train this stuff? And I wind up being that in-house trainer.
Oh, wow.
That's my lot in life.
Yeah.
And I love it. I do. I think training is so much fun.
And it's a great, and you can make do a lot of influence from that, can't you?
Yeah.
You can make a lot of difference in the industry.
Change culture.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. So you mentioned the telecoms company where you were strong armed into project management into that company. So I'm assuming that was where your first project that you would have been. What was that project?
It goes back to, it was a writing project. It was to develop their 19-volume project management methodology.
Right.
It was actually to craft that. So that was my first big thing that I was doing. And it's funny because this is back in the dark ages when computers were not as advanced as they are now. And this is also then what led to, they wanted their curriculum to be e-learning. And nobody had done e-learning at that point. E-learning was not cool. at that point. So they wanted it all rendered as e-learning, and we were the ones basically in the early 90s pioneering the notion of, okay, how do you actually make it e-learning and still make it full contact? And that was my big job initially for them. And then ultimately, we built the e-learning infrastructure for the George Washington University.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was kind of cool. And it actually sounds like I had a paying gig and the job and everything. Although a lot of times it sounds like I just do whatever comes around the corner, you know, which I do. But
yeah, well, sometimes that's the best approach, isn't it?
Yeah, that's our official corporate motto, is anything for a buck. So.
Yeah, it's the thing, isn't it? I think our conversation on LinkedIn when getting you onto here, you said, sounds like fun, let's do it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a good attitude to have for stuff, isn't it?
Keeps me off the streets and out of trouble.
I'm wondering, I haven't talked to you for a little bit, whether keeping you out of trouble is actually true. But...
on the good days, I get the occasional piece of hate mail, but aside from that, it's good.
Good. Excellent. So moving on from that, what was the largest project that you've run to date, been involved with, and what did you learn?
That'd be the GW project. That would be putting together their e-learning infrastructure. And I learned that, and actually it's kind of funny. I learned it, then I had to relearn it. The whole notion is just assume you're right. That's the biggest lesson learned I came out of the whole thing with, is people will tell you invariably that you're wrong. They'll say, oh, no, that's not the way it's really done properly. And it's like, oh, thank you for sharing. I appreciate that. But I'm going ahead the way I thought I was going ahead. Every time I made the mistake of giving serious time, effort, and energy into somebody else's approach after we had already established an approach and a goal and an objective and a charter and all the other stuff of project management, every time people would say, no, we need to back away from that and try something different, that's where I got burned. Every single blessed time. And historically, when I have had a plan and stuck to the plan, didn't always work out exactly as intended, but we always got to the end game.
Did you find yourself with the ones when you've gone off piste that your gut was telling you to stay there, but you went against your gut?
Yes.
Yeah. You know that feeling. Yeah. Trusting your gut sometimes is the right thing, isn't it?
No. And I would actually say it almost always is the right thing.
Yeah. So that leads on, and I wonder whether it's related to this. What would you call your biggest screw up? And again, what did you learn there?
Actually, my biggest screw up was not in project management. My biggest screw up was in radio.
Yeah.
I've had every job known to humankind. You pretty much pick the job, and I can tell you, oh yeah, I did that for a while. Bartender, been there. You know, dishwasher, been there. Cook, been there. But I was in radio up in Maine. And this is back in the early 80s when Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, fired all the air traffic controllers in the United States. He fired them all because they went on strike. And he said, fine, then don't bother coming back to work. And he fired all of them. There were suddenly 3,000 very high-paying jobs that were up for grabs in the U.S. 3,000 of the best government jobs you could ever land. And so I did a report on it. I did a series on how do you become an air traffic controller? And I did this, on the air over a period of several months. And it was like, today is segment 8 in becoming an air traffic controller. But I did this. And the weirdo thing that happened was, at the very end of this whole series, I got hired as an air traffic controller. And you see how well that worked out. I got hired as an air traffic controller, and
so you went through the whole process then.
Oh yeah,
and actually did. All right, I see.
Oh yeah, and the scream was I was sitting at the medical exam with a couple other people, and they said, "Oh yeah, boy, amazing, we made it this far, huh? We passed the exam." And I said, "Yeah, we passed the exam." And they said, "How'd you do on the exam?" The one guy goes, "I got a 78. Wow, you got a 78? That's a tough exam. That's a really good score." And I'm thinking, "Oh crap." Because they came around to me and they said, how'd you do? And I said, I got a 93. They go, 93? Nobody gets a 93. How long did you study? I said, study what? I just took it on, you know, I took it on a lark. I didn't even study anything.
Yeah.
It was a logic exam. So anyhow, but I flew through the exam, got hired as an air traffic controller. And I went into my boss, and this is my big lesson learned. Biggest screw up of my entire life that turned out happy. But I went into my boss in the radio station. I said, can you match these salary numbers? And he laughed at me. And he said, who's ever going to pay you that much? I said, Uncle Sam. And I thumbed my nose at him. And I said, Turner, I am so out of here. And I blew him off. And I burned a bridge.
Mm.
And the day before I was supposed to fly out to the academy for training, and I moved back to Ohio in with my stepmother and my father for just a couple of weeks, got the note, a telegram, do not report to the academy for training. You have been medically disqualified. My eyes were too bad. And so I had burned a bridge with my last boss. I had done everything wrong. And if you're looking for the biggest screw up, that was it. Because I was unemployed for months. It was a matter of struggling trying to find a job without any reference from my previous employer. And it was just pretty darn stupid on my part. Now, the good news is I got hired at this little podunk radio station in Western Maryland. I met the woman of my dreams. I married her. And we moved off to Frederick. So it has a happy ending, but jeez. You know, it's like if you're ever thinking your boss is a moron, he's a chimpanzee, he should be taken out and shot. Smile warmly at him and keep your mouth shut. Yeah, that would be my biggest screw up.
That's really interesting. Yeah. So kind of moving on from those sort of things. Moving into your less a little bit more of a positive spin of stuff and your project delivery side of it. What would you say is your proudest delivery from a project point of view? What is it that George Washington University one?
Yeah, that's tied to it. But ultimately, the company I was working for at the time, we were doing so well in the e-learning side of the house. Mm-hmm. That for one, I became their vice president of e-learning. And this isn't like a bank where every third person is a vice president. I became the VP of e-learning. And the other beauty of it was they actually took the company I was, the part of the company that I was running and spun it off and made it its own company.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I, you know, to me, that was like, you have arrived.
Yeah.
You have actually been able to take something out of whole cloth, build it, and then have them spin it off and turn it into its own company. So that was kind of cool.
That's brilliant.
Then they hired a guy from South Africa to run it.
Well, things changed, don't they?
Yeah.
So rather than let's think about not so much the project delivery themselves, but what is your proudest moment that's kind of work moment, I suppose, is the focus, but not necessarily, but your proudest project achievement that isn't necessarily the delivery itself and the project itself.
Is there anything and actually this goes to people. It's a function of the true joys in my life stem from, and I, you know, it's one of the reasons I have been a trainer for over 20 years. It's because I love the feedback. I really do.
Yeah.
And it's not the hey, wow, you know, you're kind of a funny guy. It's not that feedback, although I do like that. The the feedback that I really genuinely enjoy is when I'll run into somebody and they'll go, I know you don't remember me, but I want you to know you changed my life. And when somebody says that to me, I swear I could break into tears.
Yeah.
Just because it's so enriching. It's so fulfilling.
Yeah, helping other people is a great
it's a rush.
Yeah, brilliant. So, obviously, I was one of my questions is, why did you start writing and blogging? Well, you were destined to write anyway, weren't you? And your blog kind of flows off the back of that. And you, looking at the different things, I've got kind of a bit of a contentious question here.
Okay.
So, certification.
Yeah.
How many project management certifications do you have? Why have you got them, and which one is best?
I have two. I had three, and I let one lapse. I have the PMP. I have the PMIRMP, which is the risk management professional, which is what I, frankly, most people know me as, the risk guy.
Yeah.
You know, over in the UK, you've got David Hilson, who's yes. the risk doctor. Yeah, I'm the risk guy. So that kind of makes the distinction between the two of us. But I had the EVP, the earned value professional. That's the one I let lapse. But of the three, which do I think is the most valuable? Mm-hmm. The PMP.
Yeah.
And the reason is just because it's a ticket to be punched. It's one of those things that you go into a company and they'll say, oh, are you a PMP? It's like, oh, yes, of course I am. Now, because of the company I run, it's are you also a registered education provider, which is the other big question. Yeah. The answer is always yes. But which one do I think carries the most clout, the most weight, and actually gets people to go, okay, there, tickets punched. It's the PMP. It's not because I feel like it makes me better as a manager necessarily, but I do talk the talk. And as long as I can talk that particular language, I'm in pretty good shape.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So what was the last project podcast you listened to?
Wow.
And the answer can be, I've never listened to any.
Oh, no. I actually, yeah. But the last one I listened to was me. that's the really sad part. At itmpi.org, the IT Metrics and Productivity Institute. They do just a mountain of podcasts. Right. They have a library that is just staggeringly deep. And that was the last one I would listen to.
Cool. And the last project management related blog that you read?
Last blog I read, that was probably, and I'm going to screw up his first name. Last name is Zucker. And not Zuckerberg, but Zucker. Alan Zucker. There you go. But Alan's was the last one that I read. And I frankly try to dive into those on a pretty regular basis. And largely because I think it's a matter of I'll read through them and go, knew that. Okay, fine. That's good. But every now and then I'll go, knew that. Oh, what a sweet take. Yeah. And somebody will have found a new angle on something that I'm already doing or something that I already had a sense of. But the new angle is just that. Yeah. It's a new angle.
Yeah. And some of those things, it's a new way of, I find a new way that you could describe the thing to someone else as well, which I find really useful on some of the blogs that I've looked at.
Yeah. And by the way, I've got let me give a pointer just so that people can think I actually added some modicum of value here. And that is if somebody ever calls you with a really complicated question, this is a cheap consulting trick. If somebody ever calls you, they got a really complicated question. Here's what I want you to do. You go, wow, it is so funny that you asked me that. That is, you know, what's kind of interesting, I was just working up a blog on that. And if you don't mind waiting until 2 days from now, I'll have the blog done. And I would love for you to be the first person to give it a look and tell me whether or not I'm making any sense. Now, this accomplishes a mountain of stuff. Because for one, it says to the person who's asking you this really annoying, complicated question, hey, I'm on the same wavelength. We are simpatico. It is perfect. So I'm so glad you asked that. For two, I'm already a step ahead of you in that I'm writing a blog about this, which you aren't, but that doesn't matter. And then you've got 2 days to come up with a very thoughtful, cogent, well-considered response in 800 words or less. And it's a win-win-win. Everybody comes out further ahead. And to boot, it builds your relationship at the same time as you're writing another blog.
Oh, that's a fantastic, fantastic tip. It's, I can see how that would work. Uh-huh. Just, I think the key thing there is make sure you do write the damn blog.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. You don't, it won't be pretty.
Well, I've got two final questions. The first one is, what is the one single nugget top tip that you would give to a PM who has been in this industry 10, 20, 30 years that you think people miss? What would that one thing be? Even though they're successful as PMs, you can be very successful, but they could be more successful.
Yeah, let somebody else do it. We are, by our very nature, and if you look at McClellan and his perception on the three needs, the need for power, the need for achievement, and the need for affiliation, project managers are the high need to achieve people. As such, we want to do everything. We want to have our fingers in every flipping pie that's out there. And nothing could be worse for you. If you really want to improve your career, allow other people to take the reins now and again. And it's so hard because you're so much better at it than they are. But the reality is, if you don't give them a chance to make some of the mistakes you've made and do some of the things you've done, then they're never going to be as good as you are. And you need them to be as good as you are so that they can come back someday and say, wow, Nigel made me amazing. You know, you want that behind you.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I can see what you're saying there. That's a really good tip. Brilliant. Last question. You have a chance to go back to see your younger self on that first day in project management, in that genesis of the career that you've built up. What would you tell? What would you say to yourself?
First, I would tell myself, hey, I want you to know something. It all works out. No, that's what, because I was, and it's funny, I've seen a lot of younger people, some of my son's friends who are millennials, and you wish you could just tell them, you know what, relax and enjoy the ride. Yeah. Because, and that's what I really would, I'd go back and tell myself, don't be so flippin' nervous, just relax, enjoy it, because when you're 20 years, 30 years down the road, you're going to be rocking. Everything's going to be going just fine. You're going to be really genuinely happy and satisfied with the person who looks back at you in the mirror. And that's just a wonderful place to be.
Yeah. That's great. So thank you, Carl. That's been a enlightening, entertaining chat.
Oh, thank you.
If people want to find out more about Carl, maybe look at all the books, what's the best way, social media connection, et cetera, websites or whatever, to get hold of you?
I'm on LinkedIn, and it's Pritchard spelled the right way with a T in it. Oh, no. You'd be surprised how many people just leave the T out. But it's Carl@CarlPritchard.com. And frankly, here's the thing. If you can't figure any of it out, if you just get CarlPritchard.com, so if you send an email to Dumbo@CarlPritchard.com, that still finds its way to my mailbox.
Yeah.
I get all the default mistake mail that comes into our servers. So it's just Carl with a C, and it's CarlPritchard.com. And if anybody does chase me down, just an FYI, I will always get back to you within 24 hours. And if you don't hear back from me in 24 hours, one of two things has happened. The most likely, I'm in your spam box. I you never got back to me, Carl. And I'll say, check your spam box. And sure enough, I found it. Yeah, you emailed me 3 months ago. And I told you, 24 hours. How hard is this? But yeah, 24 hours. I will always get back to you within 24 hours.
Brilliant. Well, again, thank you very much, Carl. Anything else you want to say?
I just want to say thank you, Nigel. This is nothing but a good time.
Brilliant. And on that note, I'll wrap this up. Thank you very much, Carl, and have a fantastic day.
Do likewise.
Cheers, mate.
Another great sponsor of the show, it comes in the form of Air Manual. Air Manual is it's a tool for documenting process, which and best practices. It's a company formed by one of my interviewees, Alexis Kingsbury. I kind of summarized why my view of where we see documentation, a lot of my experience has been people will document something, a process, they'll put it in a Visio diagram that gets loaded onto a SharePoint site or something similar, and then a bunch of that. So then once that diagram has been shared with senior management, they're happy they have a process in the business. But then the detailed procedures underneath it might be with documents in just poorly kept and not linked easily and not updated. And what Air Manual does, it allows you to put in it's a tool for doing this kind of thing. You whack it in, the service in there, get in there, put in your process, your flow, and you build it down to as low a level of detail, even to the point of checklists where people can check off they've done it. So it creates that guided checklists, easy to create, easy to maintain, and all in one place. And no one's kind of rooting around to find the SharePoint. And then when you change to new SharePoint services and all that stuff, it's all there. So if you pop along to nigelcreaser.com/airmanual, there's a bit more detail there and a link there to click on to go and get, I think they offer a trial and things like that. So it's something that I think can easily reduce the amount of errors, rework, etc. within our organization. So take a look. I know you will have got a lot from that interview from Carl, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Cheers now, bye. So this is my final wrap-up. Every week you're going to hear this, you're going to get bored of it, but you can always click next podcast if so. If you have enjoyed it, if you listen to this podcast to the end of this show and you think that was great, I'd love to be able to help Nige out. There are loads of ways you can do it. The first and obvious way is to share the podcast, send it out to people. If you know colleagues and friends who'd benefit from it, you think they'd enjoy it, just send them the link. Grab one of the links, send them to www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. That's www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. And that'll push them over to a Linktree link, and it's got all of the different ways they can consume the podcast. If you are feeling generous and have a big bag of cash, you could grab a copy of one of my books. Obviously, they're available in all the usual places, and print and digital. Again, jump on the website, www.nigelcreaser.com/shop, and that will give you a list of all the different ways that you can contribute and grab copies of the book. Also got links to all my guests' books on there as well, where I get a little bit of a kickback from them. If you are of a sporting mind, I have a number through doing some of my judo and running antics. I've managed to secure a few affiliate links and affiliates there as well. So in there, somewhere in the sponsors page, there's links to those as well. So clicking onto those and grabbing if you're looking to get super fit, then that would be fabulous as well. And I get a little kickback from those. I have a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/sundaylunchpm. So again, you can ping something in there, buy me a coffee or whatever. And finally, obviously the most important is coming back, listen again, because the more of you that come back, the more visibility I get, because there's more times that it's downloaded and all the SEO works and things like that. So yeah, that's it. So if you can help me out, I would be much appreciated. If you can't, don't worry about it. Thank you very much. Cheers now. Bye. My latest, the latest affiliate that I've got on the show now is Riverside. I use Riverside to do my interviews, Riverside FM. it kind of offers you a whole, if you like, micro studio management producer tool and goes beyond that. Has a really good free layer. And I've been using it for a while now. I find it really good. When I've had issues, even though I'm not on one of the higher paid levels, the support has been quick, responsive, and of high quality, and people keen to help me. The organisation seems really good. The product seems really intuitive, and quality is really good as well. And it's a clever way of doing it is when you're recording through your browsers, so you've not got loads of desktop resources being used compared to some other products that I've used. And what they also do is they do they stream a lower quality version of it up onto as you're doing the interview, so you're not burning bandwidth while you're doing the interview and potentially impacting on the quality of the conversation. And then at the end, it uploads it, the higher quality from your browser. I mean, it's just a really good way of doing it. So if you are thinking of doing a podcast, and someone's doing a podcast, I would recommend using this tool. I found it really good. Best of the tools that I've tried using to date. And you can get that at nigelcreaser.com/riverside, and that will redirect you to my kickback page on their site, and there I will get a little kickback from them. So take a look. Thanks.
Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.